I know.
Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2723. That's 2723. Tonight we're supposed to have a guest by the name of Jessica Brown, and she is from Huntington, West Virginia. And as a very young child, she endured severe child sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, domestic violence, and complex traumas of all kinds of things at the hands of her father. And I'm not going to read any more than that, because when the guest comes on, I do like for the guests to tell their story, and we do that in chronological order. I always send an email to them and just to show them how the show goes, how it breaks down, so they already have an idea by the time they get on the show how we run our show. Okay, now tonight what I want to do, first of all, is to read the mission statement. We do have a 303 area code. I do have a co-host. Is that her?
That is Jessica.
Yes.
She's our special guest is here.
Okay, she's here. Okay. I'm going to read this. And then if you want to take over, that's fine, or I'll do it. I really don't. It's up to you. I don't care. It's usually your night, so, you know, whatever. But anyway, all right. First of all, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Okay? And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I, for one, I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And I work very hard with prevention, because it is my thought that if we could prevent a lot of this child abuse, we can't stop it, but if we can prevent it by educating the parents so that they can educate their children properly, the ones that come from good homes, I hate to put it that way, but that's the way it is, that may help put a dent in the statistics of child abuse, and that's very important. The other two are equally as important, actually. It's just that the prevention is something that I really tackle in, or, you know, I really, really believe in that. But intervention, that teaches you how to speak to your children and or to someone that you know is being, you know, abused, and how to maybe speak to the police, and then if the police get a hold of CPS or whomever. And then, of course, recovery. That's in a whole category of its own, is recovery. So, now, tonight we have two people here. That would be myself and also another person, and that is Penelope. And she, this is actually her night to run the show. And I see that she's here, and I'm glad that she's here. So, Penelope, if you would like to take over and run the show, that would be fine. If otherwise, I'll run it. It's up to you. I don't care. I'm giving you a choice. Do you want to take a nickel out and see who wins?
You know what? I love choices. Thank you. Right? A lot of times we don't have choices in life, but this is one that, thank you for the choice. And I've been getting to know Jessica over the last few days over, thank God for social media, right, over Messenger, and she and I've gone back and forth. She's given me some background, and I would love if you're okay with it, Carol, take over and walk Jessica through our special tonight.
Okay.
And her,
all right, sweetie.
Okay,
then I'll run the show. That's no problem. I can do that. That's real easy. Well, it's not easy, is it? I don't want people to think it's too easy. I'm such a nut.
No.
Okay.
It's not easy.
No, it's not easy. But, you know, we get along mostly on NASCA. I mean, most of us do. We just get along. We like sisters and brothers and all this other stuff. And we help each other. So, Jessica, I'm glad to hear that you are here. Okay. Your name is Jessica Brown. You are from Huntington, West Virginia. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's good. So, okay. I had written you, and you understand how the show works. We do things in chronological order. That way it keeps it easier for people who are listening, you know, to follow. All right, follow the story. And then, of course, I'll just say maybe 2 to 3 times during the course of the show, I would stop you. And, you know, and then the panel, and I'm going to give out the telephone number now, is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And, you know, please call in. You can be a part of the panel. And you can ask the questions, okay? And it makes the show a little more lively. Also, too, it helps to educate those people who are listening. And, you know, they can, and many times they can identify with you. And that's always a good thing, too. So for right now, why don't you begin to tell your story, Jessica, and then we'll discuss it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, actually, thank you. Thank you, Carol. It's Penelope.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't mind if I take over from here real quick and just give a little
Do you
want to
do it from here?
Yeah, is that all
yeah.
right?
Oh, that's
okay, great.
Fine.
So,
that's fine. This is your night. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So I know that Jessica's on the line, and I did want to, again, encourage anybody that's listening in. If you're streaming in, you're not sure if you want to be a member of the panel, we are so friendly here. No experience required. Please call in and support our very special guest, Jessica Brown. She is from Huntington, West Virginia, and she, in her bio that she provided to NASCA, she says as a very young child, she endured severe child abuse, physical and emotional abuse, domestic violence, and complex trauma at the hands of her biological father and her older brother. She's faced, I was isolated and not permitted to have friends, which was certainly enforced by whatever means necessary. So I'm going to now, a little bit of her bio. She provided us with so much more. I'm just going to say personally, I've gotten to know Jessica as well over the last couple days. As Carol mentioned, we've been in contact with Jessica, and she's just absolutely an amazing, incredible, a resilient person. And so I'm really looking forward to Carol and I having and hosting Jessica and you tonight. And so you're my, and we do structure these shows, as Carol mentioned, in 3 segments. And just the first from, you know, your earliest memories, your childhood, a little bit of context of your family, who's in your family, up until about the age of 18. So we can, you know, understand what your living environment was like as a young person and sort of see you grow through your lifetime. So, Jessica, I'm going to open, Carol and I are going to open it up to you.
Jessica?
Oh,
Jessica.
I'm here.
So, yeah, so we're going to open it up to you. And if you want to start just by sharing a little bit about your family.
Okay. Well, my dad had a previous marriage. He had 5 children in. And my mom had a previous marriage. She had my older brother in. And then they had me, and I would have had a younger brother as well. But my dad hit my mom in the stomach because he didn't want any more kids. And my baby brother was born with water on his brain, dead. My earliest memory of my older brother that was from my mom's previous marriage was, he cut my hair with a pair of paper cutting scissors, and my dad flew into a rage, dragged him by his feet down 12 carpeted stairs. His nose was hitting every step along the way, dragged him through the dining room, through the kitchen, turned on the faucet to the sink, and forced my brother's head under the water, and I watched him gasp for air. And then whenever my dad's anger was finally spent, he left my brother on the floor in a crumpled heap. I was still in diapers at this point, and I was following, scooting down the stairs, watching all this transpire. And my mom looked at him, did not comfort him, and literally told him she should not have made my dad mad, and left the room. And he was just left there. That's my earliest memory. From that point on, it was daily either physical abuse, sexual abuse, as far back as I can remember. And a radio played in the basement constantly, so the neighbors couldn't hear our screams. My dad would tell me not to cry because it didn't hurt when he would beat me. There were constant battles with the neighbors where my dad would pull guns on the neighbors if they turned around in our driveway, which was at the end of a dead-end street. Breaking the forced silence I lived in and attempting to get help whenever I was 10 years old nearly cost me my life because I knew it had to stop and my dad was dangerous not only to me but to everyone. Chronologically, I don't have a sense of time prior to 10. After 10, everything is very keen, but prior to that, I don't have a real good sense of time, just events. I initially reported the abuse to the CAP program whenever I was 9. I was in 4th grade. About 6 months later, they came. I came home from school not knowing anything was happening. My dad met me at the door with his 44 Magnum pacing the floors. I hid in the closet. My mom coaxed me out of it when she came home from work prior to CPS arriving. The CPS worker arrived. I reiterated the allegations of sexual abuse despite being threatened with a gun by my dad. She watched him run at me while she was there. She left me there with him, telling him he had to leave, and she never came back. CPS never came back. Shortly after, my house burned down. The day it burned down, my dad picked me up from the same school I told on him at. I was severely beaten several times for telling on my dad and trying to get him in trouble, as he called it. The neighbors knew the situation, refused to get involved. They were afraid of my dad. I was on my own. CPS was going to take me to get clothes that day until I told them my dad would shoot them to get to me, and I refused to go into the house. Even my mom fed my dad after CPS came, and she knew what was going on. I saw it. The neighbors told me he was still there. My family knew about the situation, too. They refused to get involved. They told me to tell the school. In the end, it took me changing counties, moving to a new house, going to a new school, telling everyone at school what was going on amongst the other kids. And then one day, a police officer showed up at the school. I reiterated my allegations yet again. That's the day I actually was removed from my home thanks to a police officer on a wild goose chase and a very kind, concerned fifth-grade teacher who happened to take an interest in me. They were heroes to me at 10 years old. When I was placed in kinship care, which is where I went right after they removed me that day, my brother picked up where my dad left off. He blamed me for the things my dad did to him. And until the day he died last year in 2020, my brother made it his life's mission to punish me for what my dad did to him. Everything from beating me with a belt in kinship care to stealing my identity in college to trying to kill me with a butcher knife at 17 on Thanksgiving Day. I was placed in my first foster home at 11 years old, which didn't work out. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder at 11. I was moved to my second foster home, which ended when I was returned home to my biological mother at the age of 12. My second foster mom went above and beyond, and there was actually there to comfort my mom when I was dying in the hospital from a suicide attempt after I was sent home by CPS from her house. After my mom's boyfriend severely beat me with my mom standing right there and she did nothing, I didn't feel worthy of even sleeping in a bed, so I overdosed and slept in my closet. My mom woke up to me seizing in the closet. My second foster mom heard the call on the scanner and showed up in case it was me, and it was. My mom's boyfriend told my mom she should let me die and went and cheated on her that night. A short time later, I discovered they weren't permitted to hit you in state's custody, so when I was 13, I refused to go back home to live with my mom, was placed back in state's custody. I was never able to return to my second foster home due to no beds being available. I was placed in three more foster homes, and then after jumping out of a social worker's moving vehicle when I was 13, I was placed in a lockdown treatment facility. When I was 14, I went to Golden Girl Group Home, where I spent the next 4.5 years, during which time I testified against my dad in court at the age of 15. My dad was charged with 11 various counts of sexual abuse, and he was sentenced to serve the time consecutively, not concurrently. His psychological found him to be an ingrained pedophile and capable of rehabilitation, which was the terms of any parole he would be eligible for ever. My dad died in prison of COVID with an underlying health conditions in November 2020 in Mount Olive Penitentiary, and prior to his death, I was able to forgive him for what he did, but he was where he belonged. Despite missing most of middle school due to being moved around so much in state's custody, I graduated high school with honors on time and had 13 poems published by the time I turned 18. I was never adopted. At around 17 years old, I was placed in the permanent legal physical custody of Golden Girl Group Home. Golden Girl Group Home is my childhood home and the first and only safety and stability I knew in my childhood. I almost decided not to go to college because I didn't think I was ready, but the group home enrolled me anyway. I attended Marshall University and started in with remedial classes in math. I also volunteered for the Team for West Virginia Children for 2 years while I was in college. During my junior year of college, I was re-traumatized by being repeatedly raped for months by a guy I was in a domestically violent relationship with. After taking off a year to recover, I returned to Marshall to finish obtaining my degree. Despite making a C in my introduction to social work course, I declared social work my major. I made straight A's through the core social work curriculum courses and graduated with honors with my bachelor's degree in social work in 2008. My senior thesis is over 400 pages on the correlation between domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse was sent to the president of Marshall University. I obtained my license to practice social work through the county. I'm sorry?
This is awesome. This is awesome. I don't mean to interrupt you. You're just giving us so much right now. And there's so much that you've gone through and so much that you've accomplished. I want to stop you real quickly if I can.
You've given us a lot of
from your childhood, and I can tell, and I know that Carol will probably agree, and those that are listening, and you put a lot of effort into the prep, and I can tell that you've documented chronologically the events in your life,
yeah.
And you're very well prepared for this, so thank you, and it's just, there's a lot that you've shared with us, so I would like to actually, we have obviously Carol, who's on with me, and Bill, our CEO and founder of NASA is also on the panel right now. We're here in support of you. And I'm sure they've got a lot of comments and some questions for you. So I'm going to actually invite Carol in. I'm sure she has a few things to say. If you're okay,
okay.
We break right here. There's just so much that you've given us.
Yeah. You know, you have quite a story here, young lady. And the very fact that you could get through all of this, you know, from the foster care and one didn't work out and all the problems with your mother and you know, looking the other way and the father the abuse and the sexual abuse, I mean, that's an awful, awful lot for one child to carry, okay? Let me ask you something. You said that you did very well in school and you actually wrote poetry as well. You know, we love to have poetry too. You know, at times we add things to our website. If you know, if people write really good poems and they're from the heart, you might want to consider maybe sending in a poem, because your story is quite unique in the sense that you went through so much, okay, and yet you were able to concentrate in school. You were able to achieve an awful lot of things. You know, you did well in school, and you're a poet. So you have a lot of strength. You have a lot of strength. More strength than most people, you know, have that even are on NASCA to go through all of this nightmarish thing. It was like boom, 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 one thing right after another. I, too, went through boom, 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 one thing after another. But I didn't write poetry, okay? So, but I love to sing, so I make up for it that way. But, and I was an athlete. When you were going through all this terrible, horrific abuse, you must have been very frightened. Tell us a little bit about your feelings, because, my God, with all the things you went through, I mean, I know what it's like to be beaten. I know what it's like to be sexually abused in the family. I know all those things, too, and I know how I felt. But what we like to do is share, you know, with the people who are listening. Why? Because we're educating. And then there are those also, too, who I can identify. They see that they're not alone. And telling the story, that's a big step, okay, into the beginning of recovery, absolutely.
My poetry is actually was expressing how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my therapy. And it is very revealing as far as how I felt. And I've got a choice of 16 different poems I can choose from, actually, that I could read any one of them to you to describe the way I felt, one being the child tale, or a
mm-hmm.
child tale.
Mm-hmm. Well, we would like to hear a poem if you have one, but not right this second. We have to get through your story first. And then maybe like, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes before the show comes to the end. We've done this before, okay, Penelope? When someone is a poet, we let them read a poem. Yeah, I love poetry. I think it's great. So I don't have any more questions or comments to make right now, except that I admire you, okay? I will say that. Because were you not frightened, terribly frightened? That's my only question, as you were going through each one of these abuses.
Oh, yeah, I'm terrified.
I bet you were.
Absolutely terrified. Yeah, I stayed terrified. I walked on eggshells for years. And well, until
mm-hmm.
about third grade, and then I was just like, forget it. What are you going to do, beat me?
Mm-hmm.
I changed.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, yeah. I started the rebellion. And
well,
my attitude
let me ask
totally changed.
Yeah. Did you become like a tough girl? Like I was a tough girl and that's what saved me, one of the things? Okay. Were you rough and tough and tumbly like I became?
Nope.
You,
well,
you
I was rough and tough anyway. I literally had to fight even in the neighborhood. You know, so, I mean, I've, like, for instance, at age 6, during one particular incident where a neighborhood kid was physically fighting with my brother got picked on that. So I went to a neighbor's shed, got a shovel, which I used to hit the boy who was fighting with my brother in the head. And he never bothered my brother again after that. But I did. I hit him in the head with the shovel. I grew up rough.
Well, you're a very strong girl, and I probably shouldn't call you a girl. Hold on. But you guys might lose me. I've got another storm, Bill. Somebody put a jinx on me when I moved here. I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to go. Maybe we should go to Bill. Maybe he just came on though,
yeah.
A few minutes ago. Yeah. And maybe he'd like to welcome you to the show, though. And certainly you might have things that you want to ask questions about. So I'm going to hand this back over to you, okay, because Wednesday usually is your night. Go ahead. Bill?
Yeah, I'd like to bring Bill. Yeah, bring in Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, ladies. It's nice to be here. And, Jessica, I'm really appreciative of your showing up. I wasn't sure what was going to happen tonight, so it just occurred to me. I looked up, and it was like 5:10. I said, oh, I've been involved. She said, okay. And you are. So, but I did hear the bulk of your story. And I, of course, wrote up the bio for you that's posted. So I am familiar with it. And it is horrific. It is amazing. The most amazing thing about stories like this is how far you've come considering where you started. I mean, it's like almost miraculous. It seems like you can't get here when you started back there. You know, Jessica? You can. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the hope that we want to transmit to our listeners, who are many, some of which are survivors who are new, and they have not yet told their story. That, you know, that everybody's story is important, that telling your story is important, and that you're gonna benefit from it, you know. So anyway, I'll be quiet and let you talk a little bit more. But thanks so much for being here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. You know, Jessica, I did want to comment, and I mean, I read your bio that Bill had put together, and you know, just heard your testimony, especially in, you know, what you were born into, and what you, you know, the abuse that you suffered at the hands of your father, from your brother, and the complete neglect from your mother, and obviously from other entities that are supposed to protect you. And yet you and I have had some dialogue back and forth. And as to what Bill said and really what Carol said as well, you are, I think the word I want to use is rise. Like, you just keep on rising up and just persevering and not allowing that, as horrific as it was, as scared as you were. I know you were diagnosed with, you know, you had mentioned PTSD and bipolar disorder at 11 years old. But you did well in school. You focused on goals. And you just kept rising up. And but just to hear about this complex, multi-form maltreatment now in your testimony, because I feel like I got to know you the last couple of days. We were going back and forth on Messenger, and you're so positive. And it's just, it is miraculous. You are really miraculous. And you really, to me, encompass the hope, you know, and hope and healing that we talk about through recovery, because it's possible. And you're just the living proof of that. It's just incredible.
Thank you.
She really is. I'm very taken by this with the bio, and the way she's handled it is magnificent. And my best friend is a cat too. I'm looking at the bio here. I love my cat. She's got lots of secrets in her head, believe me. So go ahead, continue on, you know, with your story. I mean, my God, you know, again, I'm handing this over to Penelope. It is her night usually to host. So go on with your story.
Well, thanks. So I feel like we're a host team. So absolutely. Mm-hmm. But please, Jessica, we know you've got a lot more to share with us. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of it's from recent that I have left. And then I've got details I can add in after that as well. I wasn't sure how much time I would have, so I kept it kind of short.
We've got an hour left, 90-minute show. So
okay.
Just to let you know, we are 30 minutes in, so you can slow down a little if you wish, and you know, augment as you go through each. I know we left with you getting your social work degree, and you were graduating with honors, mm-hmm. but we have 30 minutes for this little segment, so you can augment, you know, each piece and take your time.
Okay. I may do some clarification on things I've already mentioned because I went through them kind of fast. I obtained my license to practice social work through the Council on Social Work Education examination process, and I worked for CPS for almost a year following graduation from college. I didn't have medical insurance in college, and there was no way to get my medication for my bipolar disorder, so I went without it. Within 6 months of leaving CPS and working there for a year, my unmedicated manic bipolar acted up to the point where it caused me to go into a catatonic state, and I ended up becoming disabled as a result. But there's always room for hope, and I'm not giving up. Despite being disabled, I joined the Step Up for Women program and got a pre-apprenticeship certification in manufacturing, amongst various other trainings. I'm currently working on writing a book about my life. I've joined the Women Igniting Change program, and I'll be working on a project I named Rise, From Shattered Silence to Strength. I'm also looking into the possibility of bringing a chapter of Foster Care Alumni of America to West Virginia. I'm currently working on that. And I have applied to the social work master's program at the University of Pikeville, among many other things. My story is only a single example of a child in the system, but that's my conclusion. I'm going to wait on that till towards the end. But I have other things I can add in. I kept it, kept the initial that I did for the show kind of short. I haven't had an interview yet this long. But at age six, my neighbor was attacking a litter of kittens in the garage next door attached to our house, and I hollered at him and told him I would kill him if he didn't stop. He backed off and stopped. I rescued that litter of kittens from the garage and adopted and raised them. They were my friends. So whether they were mine or not, I protected the cats in my neighborhood. In addition to being abused, I also advocated for what was weaker than me.
I was laughing at you a little bit there, honey, because, and we can slow down, absolutely. I was laughing at you a little bit because that's what I do. Like every animal I have, we've rescued, okay? So when you said that you were rescuing the cats in your neighborhood, you know, this is a good thing. They are our friends. And of course, some people look at their animals as their babies. You know what I'm saying? So, right. And so this was a healthy thing for you to do, and it shows that you have love and you have compassion because you're able to do this. A lot of times when kids are horribly abused, just like you certainly have been, they lose the ability. They become numb, okay? They become numb, and that's a defense mechanism, okay, that they actually use. Whether they do it on purpose or not. I mean, maybe the brain does it because it's just too much, you know, to try to live with all of the abuse that you went through. Was there ever a time that you got in, I doubt this, but was there ever a time that you ever, you know, got into drugs and alcohol, things like that, to numb yourself out?
No.
Good girl.
No, I've never been a drinker, and I don't like the taste, so it never appealed to me. I tried to drink a beer once, and then it was just like, bleh. And then drugs, I never even went around. The worst thing I've ever done as far as drugs is closest thing I've ever done is smoke cigarettes.
Have you ever been in, like, an overeater? Like, some people become, you know, anorexic, or they become bulimic, or, you know, they eat too much and then they throw up. Did you ever have any of those issues, or were you ever suicidal? You did have bulimia.
No, not me. My mom did.
Oh.
I did.
Oh, your mother did. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My brother did too.
Yeah.
He was a compulsive overeater, and also he had bulimia. But I basically learned from their mistakes.
That's good. That's good. That shows strength. Because you were able to learn. I mean, you could see things that they were doing, the way they were behaving. You knew that it was wrong. And even to the things that they were doing, like with the overeating or the drinking, you know, the bulimia and a lot of the stuff that you were just mentioning. I think you're like a miracle kid. I really do. Because I don't think I've never – I've been here 11 years, and I don't think I've ever – had someone's story, you know, that was, you know, so involved, such as yours is. Many of us have very bad pasts, don't get me wrong, but you were able to handle it so well. You didn't become a volatile child. You know, there's just
now,
so many things.
I have my wild moments.
You're a loud mouth? I'm a loud mouth. Go ahead.
Did you have my moments.
Is that what you said? Mm-hmm.
I had my moments, and whenever I was, like, for instance, the reason my first foster home didn't work out was because my foster mom thought I was going to run away in my first foster home. And whenever I was out on the porch, she grabbed me, dragged me back inside, and I fought her back.
Mm-hmm.
It went full restraint. I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had my moments. I'm not perfect.
No one's perfect. But still, overall, generally speaking, you handled life quite well for a child who was put in all those terrible situations. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe Penelope wants to take it from here. I just wanted to ask those questions and so forth.
Well, there's one thing I learned in first grade that I've held on to all these years that really gave me a lot of resilience. And the one thing, it was a play that I learned it from. I don't remember the play, but I remember the moral. And it was, nobody can take away from you what you know. That's the one thing nobody can ever take away from you. And I held on to that.
That's good. I like that.
That is good. That is wonderful. I mean, that is, I think, the premise is to really know that you can be stripped of so many things, as we know from being abused, but one thing you cannot be stripped of is your mind. And the choices that you make about what happened to you and if you're going to move forward or not, what you're going to do about
right.
it. You know, no one can control your choices on how you're going to react. Figure that out very, very early on. And you weren't going to let anything get in your way. You decided, you know, that you were going to persevere and you were going to rise. So I keep using that word, rise up, but you were going to rise, not going to mm-hmm. get you down. And I think it's incredible because of all the testimonies that I've heard, including my own, I've never heard of someone that's gone through your type of abuse, you know, multi-form maltreatment for so many years who has not numbed out in some way, you know, found an escape that wasn't a healthy one. And I think that's really incredible that you stayed really present. And you did mention from the age of, you know, birth till 10, there's that very, not a lot of memory and hard to pinpoint time, and things mm-hmm. are clear after 10 years old. And that is a little bit of dissociation. But I'm with Carol on that, just the fact that you, you know, you just share with us that quote, just where that, you know, I'm responding to that with these comments, but you kept control. You kept yourself present. You kept yourself present and you chose not to numb. Very unusual for someone young, I have to say. It was very unusual. So you're very incredible. Did you, I know you said you had your cat, and I know you did well in school. Did you have friends? Did you have a social life?
No, I wasn't allowed to have friends until I was gone from my dad. He was afraid I was going to tell his secret. And it was strictly enforced. Whenever I was 4 years old, roughly, just before I started school, I was going to ask to go out onto the driveway to play because I was playing on the porch on the side of our house. And he thought I was going to ask to go play with the neighborhood kids on the sidewalk, and he backhanded me across the face so hard it knocked me over.
Oh.
Just because he thought I was going to ask to go play with the neighborhood kids on the sidewalk.
See, and living in that kind of environment, you said, quote-unquote, walking on eggshells, I know what that's like. I've used that term before myself. You know, our bodies, our autonomic nervous system, when we're locked on eggshells, it sends us into a state of fight or flight or freeze, right, which is a kind of a branch association. When you're locked on eggshells, you were isolated, you were living in fear, and yet you still remained present.
Cats.
Which is
amazing. I learned from cats to love, resilience, cats.
Wow.
No matter what happened to them, they didn't give up. They didn't go do what I did, you know, try to commit suicide. They never quit until they were just gone. Cats. They're very resilient creatures.
Yeah, they have nine lives, right? I was always saying they have nine lives.
Yeah.
They are resilient, really resilient. I want to invite Bill back in because we haven't heard from Bill for a while.
Okay, I'm pretty fascinated by this, Jessica, I've got to tell you. I have heard of people who have had bad experiences in their youth and don't turn to drugs and alcohol and so forth, but usually there's something in their lives. It could be, for example, they become a sex worker, or they become a gambler, or they get into promiscuity or something like that. But most people have some reaction, as Carol said, that's obsessive and compulsive. And it sounds like you emerged without that, which is wonderful. But I don't find it shocking that that's such the case. It's just your story. And, you know, I love the story about learning when you were, I think you said first grade or something, that
perfect.
You, that you heard the moral of the story. They can't take away what you know or something. Is that
yeah.
what it was? Yeah. That's unbelievable. And to have heard it in first grade and adhered to it and still remember it today, that's amazing. Amazing. I mean, that's something we should teach first graders, but we don't. You know, we teach them Jack and Jill go up the hill. You know, that's what we teach them. And they need some life lessons from that point on, especially kids that are, you know, you can't tell which kids are necessarily, which kids are in dire straits and need help or need, you know, some, it just needs good stories in their life, good kind of energy in their life, which you certainly did. The last thing I wanted to just touch on, which was I was wondering, is I'm familiar with parts of West Virginia, but most people think of West Virginia as the kind of hillbilly state, right? terms of, but, you know, there are cities in West Virginia and towns in West Virginia, and it has everything. But it also has kind of the cabin in the woods that's falling apart kind of, that too. And I didn't hear what your family's economic situation was. So were you middle class or lower class or what?
Well, we were probably lower middle class. My mom was the only one who worked. My dad stayed at home, and she worked for the state. Worked for the state. She worked at a state mental hospital.
Well, that's
and she retired
job,
from there after 43 years, a few years back.
Holy crow. Well, she had a career then. So that's,
she had a career.
That's not usually,
That's my dad was in the military.
Okay.
He was honorably released from the Navy.
So I say you're probably right, you know, sort of lower middle class. That's good to know. Because I was trying to picture, you know, the basement and so forth, and the garage that you just mentioned, the side porch. I couldn't do so because I'd missed the kind of family that you grew up in. But anyway.
Sadly, it would have been easier probably for me to get help if I had been lower income.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you seeing people that were lower income getting help?
Well, they just. I don't know. That's just a guess.
It's a guess?
Just a guess. I could be totally off the wall wrong. Just a guess.
You could be right and still totally off the wall, Jessica.
How?
You could be totally right and still be off the wall. I'm kidding. All right, so your story is amazing, and I know you have a lot to give back. You did a lot to give back, and you still want to do more, as you said. You'd like to perhaps bring a chapter of the foster care club or organization to your area. I mean, this is wonderful stuff. Say again?
Foster Care Alumni of America? I'd like them to bring a chapter of it here, and I'm trying to get a hold of them so they can possibly do that.
Right.
I'm going to ask them. See if I can ever reach them.
Okay. Well, if you can't find anywhere else to volunteer yourself, Jessica, you can volunteer with us. It would be more than West Virginia because we're, you know, national and even international. But we always have place. We don't want people who have a desire to be a service to miss the opportunity because it's wonderful. We know it. Those of us who are doing it, and you're certainly welcome to tell us.
I've actually applied to be an ambassador in West Virginia. So,
yeah.
Oh, right. Wonderful. So that's great. So I spoke. That's right. You're familiar now with a lot of what we do, but there's more to learn, and I'm sure you will.
Oh, always.
Yeah. All right. Well, terrific. Terrific. I'll give you back to Penelope now, but I'll stay here. I'm not going to go because I want to make sure I support you, and I'm happy to do that. But we're all of service here as best as we can. Mm-hmm. So. All right, I'm a panelist tonight, Penelope.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
I am too. This is her night. Go ahead.
Right.
I'm just chiming in once in a while. Go ahead.
You've got 3/4 of the board on your show, Jessica. So we're all here supporting you and just absolutely enthralled with you. And amazed with your story, and absolutely, we talked about your interest in being the ambassador for West Virginia, and I think that's a great opportunity. Carol's amazing in how she's. I learned so much from her and Bill about how they approach and spread the word about NAFTA and what we're all about in our mission in their areas. And I think you would absolutely just be phenomenal. With that, so I echo Bill's sentiments completely. And I'm thinking about you being 18 years old and a high achiever academically, going to college. So did you go to college? And I didn't catch every detail of your first segment. Were you in West Virginia? Where did you go to school? How was school, you know, were you supported financially at school? Did you have to pay your way through school? I'm very interested to know about your school and that path.
Well, I almost decided not to go to college. I wanted to go to junior college. The group home actually enrolled me anyway in Marshall because I started college in high school.
Okay.
So I was already a student anyway whenever I graduated from high school. I'd taken English 101 in high school at Marshall University. It was something they had offered, and so it was easy for them to enroll me in Marshall whenever I graduated anyway. So whenever I went to Marshall, I actually got student loans. The Pell Grant covered my tuition or the vast majority of it. I'm not sure exactly how that worked out, but I lived on my student loans until I graduated. And I worked. That's how I made it through school. And then I had also help from my ex-husband's family before we got married, too. But other than that, I didn't have help. And I didn't 2 years after I graduated high school, I refused to talk to my mom because she was married to somebody who was addicted to crack.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit on me. And I was like, no. Yeah. So there was 2 years there that I didn't even talk to her. Because she was with, and she always picked her men over men, over me. So, yeah. And she didn't pick the best men. That's why I chose safe custody over her. I was safer in safe custody where they can't hit you, where I was literally safer in safe custody than being around her. And that's why I chose what I did for my safety.
And that is, I know, not an easy decision, but I know it's a, and from what I've heard, you know, not, a lot of times kids want to stay with their parents no matter how bad it is.
Not me.
But not you, which is, which
no.
is, which is not always the case. But you were, you know, you've always advocated for yourself from an early age, and so I'm not surprised. And do you have a relationship with your mother now?
Yes. She's been single for 10 years plus. After her fourth failed marriage, she gave up on dating and all that stuff, and we were able to repair our relationship.
So you do have a relationship with your mother now. Does she know about your healing journey and your work and your poems and the fact that you're doing so well and the things you're involved in?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, of course. She also got on medication for her mental illnesses that she has. I don't know what they are. I've never really asked her what mental illness she does have, but she told me she does have one. And she was explained that she was unmedicated for that whenever all that transpired for four husbands. And she did have a drinking problem. I was left after CPS came. A little thing I didn't add in there was when after my house burned down, my mom had a DUI accident, and she was required to go on weekends to spend time in jail for that. And I was left with my dad. I was during that time that she was spending jail time. During that time, CPS never came back, and they could have easily found us because we were living in a camper on the driveway of our old house that had burned.
Mm.
So they literally just never came back. So, yeah. And my mom had to, I remember the last time my dad beat me was the Monday before the cop came. The school wouldn't let me leave because there was a big storm outside. And he accused me of trying to get him in trouble and beat me from one side of the house to the other, cornered me by the basement door, pounding me in the head with his fist as I was crouched down in the corner between the basement door and the counter in the kitchen. And I had my first heart-to-heart talk with my mom. I went and stayed with my grandmother that weekend, and that's when she told me I needed to tell the school. Again, they wouldn't get involved. So the following Monday, it was like a godsend that the cop showed up on a random goose chase, and the teacher that I had that I wanted to tell, she was there, and I think she's the one that might have called CPS. I'm not sure exactly how all that played out, but there, my fifth grade teacher was the first one that responded to the situation after I had talked to the cop. So it was the two of them, but I finally got the help I needed. You know, and to me, at 10 years old, those two are my heroes. because nobody mm-hmm. else would do any. I mean, I was
guardian.
In hell. I was living
in a way.
Yeah,
you were. And how sad that it took 10 years. Although, thank God for those angels, you know, that came into your life and made that happen. But it says something about our society, the fact that it took 10 years with that type of visibility and CPS involved for you to get the ball rolling on helping
yeah.
you to be safe.
But he got 45 to 105 years without the possibility of parole because it was that severe, because he not only he didn't stop there. He stalked me. Whenever I was in kinship care, he actually came to my grandmother's house trying to break down her door. And she met him at the door with a shotgun and told him that she would blow his brains all over the pavement if he didn't leave. He showed up at Camden Park on a trip. I went there with my brother and my mom. My mom and my brother were running scared, and I had enough at that point. And I was 11 years old at the time. And that was the first time I ever actually stood up to my dad, is during that incident when he showed up at Camden Park, which is a small fun center, basically. It's got rides like Kings Island, but it's much, much, much smaller. But he showed up, and I actually stood up to him at that theme park, and he showed up when he showed up on a motorcycle, and I walked right up to him, told him to leave us the hell alone because he was not supposed to be around us, and believe it or not, he turned around and he flipping left. Right there, he left whenever I stood up to him at 11 years old. I couldn't believe it.
That takes a lot of guts. That is some guts.
Well, you know, let me say something there. A lot of times, these people, they don't deserve. I said this last night, and I'll say it again. There are parents that don't even deserve that title as parents, okay? Because they don't know how to be a parent, and they don't want to be either. And with your father, you know, many times these people are bullies. Now you were only 11 years old. But
I was quite a firecracker.
I know you were a tough little girl. You see, you're showing me so the sides of you. I'm seeing this. I'm picking up on it. And that's good. That's good. Because that's what keeps you going, too, okay? Because a lot of kids, they become introverts, and they internalize a lot of things that happen to them, and it just crushes them. It crushes them. And they're not able then to, you know, to move forward and to do the things that you've done with your life, and then to do so well in school, say, and so forth and so on. So the fact that you had this stability about you and this toughness inside of you, that too is another reason why you're so successful today. And I just love hearing stories like this. Because so often it's the other way with far too many people. You know, far too many people. I get calls from people that can't get out of their stuck mood and move forward. Whereas you're able to have, you know, completed a lot of things in your life. And you have a bright, sunny way about you. Another bubbly one. Here we go, where you can, where you can, you have vision, and this is incredible. I'm finding this to be incredible because so often, you know, our NASCA people, they come on and they're just so downtrodden, they're so, you know, beaten many times that they, again, they need so much help. You said that your only therapy was your cats. You've never went and sought any type of therapy. Did I hear you correctly?
Well, technically I've had therapy, but I never really trusted them enough to talk to them.
Oh, okay.
Like whenever I was in the group home and stuff like that, I mean, every week for the most part, with one exception, for a short bit. I had therapy all throughout the time I was in the group home. The therapy itself, I never trusted them enough to talk to them more than random stuff, never anything deeper than, oh, yeah, I had a good day at school, this is what I did in school, that kind of thing. So therapy didn't really do anything for me.
Okay, well, you know, once in a... Go ahead.
My first therapist ruined me on therapy. It wasn't any of the therapists after her. She trash-talked my mom and my dad during a therapy session, and while I couldn't say much about what she said about my dad, because it was true, what she said about my mom angered me because it was lies. My reaction was to cuss her out in no uncertain terms. I ran away, not only from her office, but down the street. And this therapist is now considered a sexual abuse therapist, specialist, whatever, in my area.
That's true. Yeah. So some areas don't. In fact, I'm trying to help a guy on Facebook right now in the closed group. I guess it was, well, maybe it's not closed. But anyway, the point is that if you're more in the urban areas, if you're in the urban areas, a lot of times there's a lot more therapy that's available. Whereas if you're more in a countryfied area, you know, there's less therapy so available to people. But you know what? You're doing fine. I'm not saying that you're perfect either. No one's perfect, like you said. But what the heck? You're doing quite well. You really are. So that's good.
There's definitely always room for improvement for everyone.
Well, do you have nightmares? Do you suffer any type? You said that you were classified, I think, at one point. You did say something about PTSD. I couldn't hear you right because there's a storm. And now it's calmed down. Knock on wood there. Did you say something like that? I couldn't hear her. You did? Okay. All right.
Yes.
So,
nightmares, I had them for years. I don't have them now, but I had them for years. I would grind my teeth to the point that I would almost break them. I would fight in my sleep so much so it terrified my grandmother because I was doing it at 10 years old. And it lasted until after I went catatonic. After catatonia, no. It stopped.
Well, that's good. Mine are gone, too, thank God. Yeah. I got mad at mine, and I cursed at them, and they ran away. I don't have nightmares anymore.
I don't know how it happened or what happened with that, but after I went catatonic and came back, it's just gone.
Well, that's good. I'm thankful. Let me ask you something. Do you have problems with relationships? I mean, do you go out? I mean, do you have dates or, you know, I don't know how old you are. You sound like a kid. I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I can't
I'm 38.
Tell. Well, that's pretty young.
I'm 38.
That's pretty young.
I have a girlfriend.
That's good. So then you are able to have, you know, relationships, and that's good. That's wonderful.
Well,
a lot of people have trouble with that.
13 years.
Wow.
I was with my ex-husband 13 years. There wasn't abuse in that relationship at all. During the time we had split up is when I ended up in the domestic violence relationship. That was on a short break we had before we ever got married. And then I didn't date again for 5 years. And then after that, you know, I've been seeing the guy I'm seeing now for probably about 4 or 5 years. So.
That's great. That's great. I'm really proud of you, okay? I just want to tell you that. I want to get that out there because you're doing so well. And like you said, no one's perfect. And that's quite right. Whether you're a survivor or you never had anything happen to you at all, no one's perfect. So you're able, though, to maintain relationships and all this other stuff. This is quite good. I'm happy with you, by God. Yes, I am. Penelope, I'm handing this over to you again. Okay, there's John here. Oh, and it's John Anderson. That's who it is, yeah.
It is.
Hi, John.
Actually, John Anderson.
Yes, hello, everybody.
Foster mom. And the teacher to help me.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hey, Carol, how are you? How's
everybody? I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you.
Great. Sorry to join a little late today. Have some not feeling too well earlier today. I'm feeling good now, though. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hello, Jessica.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Awesome.
How are
awesome.
You?
Yeah. Good. You having a good night?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
I couldn't wait for this night. I know I'm a little late coming on, but it's better late than never, I know. I'm just, sitting here listening to you communicate with everybody, you're doing such a fantastic job, and getting your message out and just trying to spread that healing, And I think that's what you come across is so well adoring, because you have that young, jolly, happy voice that we all need to hear. I guess it was Carol said earlier, how old are you? Sound like a baby, Well,
okay.
38, to a lot of us, maybe that is. But that's what we need to hear, I think, every day. It's just a really good vibe coming from somebody, So, absolutely. Yeah,
well, I'm
so
happy
I'm
with it, too.
Yeah, well,
I always say, that there is life after abuse, and there is. And she's the living proof of it, because she's so bubbly, and she's focused. She has vision. I like this. I'm enjoying
absolutely.
This story. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, absolutely. Because if you look at her bio, all I see in there is nothing but hope. Out of her. Look at the words. They're coming out left and right, just as far as healing goes and the journey and just healing and everything else. I think she's doing a fantastic job by being what she is, alone, setting that example that we all need, especially in that part of the country up there. Because I know that there's not too many people up in that area that are willing to be ambassadors from Kentucky and West Virginia, Tennessee. Some are. But there's certain areas where we really need, you. And I think that you might just be that one for that area, if you're up for that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, good.
I'm
going to
be quiet now and then. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to take too much of your time. This is your night, and I want you to make the most of it.
I have a question that I'd like to get in, if it's possible.
Oh, of course.
Well, it's related to the fact that you're obviously, you really, you survived a lot. In our name is the word survive, survivor, right? Adult survivors of child abuse. Well, you are a survivor. You started to survive this when you were young, when, you couldn't find anybody else to be friends with, you found some cats. When you couldn't find anybody else to take your side, somehow a teacher noticed in you something that she wanted to report. And I think it probably was the teacher that got in touch with CPS and maybe some law enforcement, whatever it was. Everything that happened to you was serendipitously, how do you say that, Penelope? It was amazing that one thing after another happened that was really great. And one of the things that happened that was really great was you ended up in foster care. And you quickly said, but nobody ever adopted me. Well, you know what? A foster care did right by you. And this is something I want to point out to the listeners. A lot of times we'll hear people that come on and their foster care story is horrible. Really horrible. And we end up saying that, it depends on where you are. If you're lucky enough to be with a good one, good. But a lot of people end up in a situation where the foster care system really needs to be reworked, completely reworked. But you managed, again, to survive. Not survive, you thrived. And I understand what you said, that, when you're in high school, you were given the opportunity to go to some advanced placement classes. And that made you eligible for college. This is all amazing. So connected, too, So the fact that you want to help foster kids, among the other things that you might want to do, is a big part of your journey, because you know that if it's done right, kids who are abused and even in foster care abused are they're capable of rising up, as somebody just said, of surviving and then thriving, because that's what we hear in your voice. You hear somebody that's thriving, and we can understand that your thriving began some time ago, but now, you know, you've gone through the domestic violence stuff and you've gone through this and that and the other thing, and you're at a place that's really, you're really a lot healthier than an awful lot of people would be at 38, believe me. And we're proud of you. We love it.
Well, thank you. So. Well, what I believe is this. If I can do what I've done with what I have had, others can too, and they can do more.
Exactly.
It's easier to tear someone down than to build someone up, but much more rewarding. The best way I have found to overcome and thrive despite adversity, flip a negative into a positive. Use it to help others, which enables you to rise above it. And it's always better to rise together than alone.
Well, we want to welcome you, and John, too, to the NASCA family, because that's kind of, you know, a central point about what we try to do. We help each other, you know, and that's how we do survive, because we become the family that we didn't have in a lot of cases. The NASCA family really appreciates John and you, who are relatively new to us, because we need the fresh blood. You know, not to be icky about it, but, you know, we need, you know, younger people and newer people and so forth, because there's energy.
Speak for yourself.
How about just a little saliva?
I am speaking for myself.
What? Maybe some saliva, Bill, instead of the blood, maybe.
I used the wrong word. But the point is that, you know, it takes young energy, really. Youngish, meaning new to the group, not young in chronological years. But sometimes people that come in to NASCA are shocked that they finally found a place that they didn't, that they've been looking for 20 years. Some of them do that. You know, they tell us that. I've been looking for this forever, and here it is. And, you know, you guys do everything that I was looking for, and that's deliberate. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, right, John? That's what we're trying to do.
I think one of the biggest things that Jessica said.
That was similar to my reaction when I found NASCA.
There you go.
Oh, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. the first time I spoke with Jessica, she was like, "Where you been all my life?" You know. Well,
right.
You know, here we are. Here we are. You know.
Yep.
And I like the one fact that you said.
I just want. Go ahead, Jessica.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to mention, because we're running low on time, that one of the main things that I want is to empower, inspire, and encourage people to not only survive but overcome and thrive despite the adversity they face. Chase their dreams. Using my life story as an example of what can be done and more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're in the right place, believe me. You're in the right place. Absolutely doing it. All right, I'll be quiet, Penelope, but I wanted to make the comment about foster care, especially because we hear so many people come on and they denigrate their foster care experience, and rightly so, it was horrible. But here's a person that's, you know, upholding foster care as the way I heard it. You know, she survived a lot of her life because of how she was treated. And God bless the foster care people she ran into. So there you go.
No, I think that's an important part of foster care system. I wanted to share with you is you remind me very much of one of our NASCA family members who came on the show a little over a year ago. And her name is Sky Leah Roth. Now it is Dr. Sky Leah Roth. She's, like I said, she's we say younger, so I think she's around 30 years old. So her testimony is she came on the show, so I'm not saying anything that is confidential. She's all public. It's been archived on her show. But you both have a lot of parallels, because she, as a young, very young, in her family of origin, a very similar story to yours, advocated for herself to get into foster care, and which was, we felt, you know, very unusual, right? The advocacy to leave the family of origin and go to foster care. She had very similar attitude to yours of just, you know, rising above, obviously excelled in school, and is doing very, very well. And I would just, you know, because you're both NASA family members, I'm sure you can find her. She's on our, probably on our Facebook group page that I know you're on, Dr. Sky Leah Ross. I will try and connect you to, because I think she also is involved in the foster, and my mind's going blank right now, the foster care organization that's national that you mentioned you want to get a chapter in West Virginia. I believe she's involved in that. So I think that you two would really be a nice connection for each other. So I think you have some of the same history and some of the same vision for your work and for the future with foster care. So I wanted to mention that as well. So we do have 13 minutes left, and I know we've got a lot of, we're all chiefs right now on the panel. So it is your show. It is your show. It is your night, and I know that you wanted to leave us with some words, which you already have, and with a poem. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to take the next several minutes and do that.
Sure, Paul. Is that what you want
if
me
you
to
like.
Do?
Yeah, if you like.
I can read A Child's Tale. It was one of my published poems. It's short. It's not real long. It says, haunting memories that fill the mind, walls seem such vile deceit, as if possessed by putrid evil, anger overwhelms every inch, muffling screams of pure anguish, never seeping beyond walls of so many violent secrets. Horror scars the very foundation, a living hell witnessed only by blind eyes of pure stone. No voice could describe such misery. That's it. That's the whole poem.
Mm. It's good.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Do you have another one? Do you have another one you'd like to share, too? I love poetry, so if you have another one, that'd be fine, too.
There's House of Pain. Mass pain behind solid walls, black painted as a portrait of bliss. New hell begins every waking day. Hidden anger unleashes relentlessly, battered and viciously violated. Muffled screams cry for help that will never come. Fragile deep inside, hoping not to break. Alone in this house of pain, soul shattered, dreams battered. No one knew of the terror one young child had to face.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we have a poet. Yes, we do.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
You were mentioning they're published.
I just said I wrote those as a teenager. That was my therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'll say something. That's good. You know, when people do poetry, like some people write books. I wrote a book. There's many authors in NASCA. And by the way, when my book was published, there was only one other on Amazon. Oh, my God. Now you open it up and it's flooded, okay? And my book was actually written in Japanese, too. That's crazy. You can see that when you look it up. But the point is this. Whether we write our books or whether we write poetry or whether we're blogging, whatever it is, you know, we have our bloggers. Whatever it is that you do, you know, this is an expression of yourself. We used to have a person on that was very heavy into art. In fact, we had a couple people, and they did beautiful work with their art. And I bought some of them because when I would do presentations, I'd say, make a picture of a child who is outside of the house and scared and has a look up, you know, about their face or whatever. I give them ideas as to what I wanted. And both of them, there were two artists, they did beautiful work, and I was able to take that, you know, to the presentations, and people were taking pictures of them, taking pictures of their pictures. So, and asking who the artists were, and I said, well, it's signed, you know, so they'd look down and they'd see that. So you see, we are people of worth. This is the thing. We are able to do things. We are able to have a radio show, thanks to Bill. You know, we are able to speak. We are able, we're doing. We're survivors, and we are people also, too. There are activists. I have a big mouth. We all know this. And my mouth gets going, and I get out there, and they know I've been around because that's what I do. And, you know, so, you know, we many times I post all kinds of things from the website because our website, naasca.org, nasca.org, is so good. You can get so much information right from there under prevention, intervention, and recovery. And, you know, there's just all kinds of things that we can offer the public. So we're always trying to educate society, hoping that they'll take an interest and put that dent, like I like to say, in the statistics of child abuse. Can't stop it, but we can certainly help educate people, and maybe they will help their children so that they won't be a target. And if they are a target, they'll know what to do. So there's just so many things that we do at NASCA. And if you want to, you know, put yourself out there, and if you want to, you know, to be someone who would be working with NASCA, that, I think that's a great thing. I think that'd be very good.
Oh, I'm definitely interested in that.
Okay, that's good. So, okay, it's up to you, sweetie. Go back. You're in charge tonight. It's not me. I just, you know, I wanted to get a few things out.
Well, you know, thank you, Carol. And Jessica, I would just say, we know we've talked about it. I'm with Bill. It's not an age thing, but I do think, you know, when we have someone new who comes into the organization who has your energy like you and John, it's reinvigorating for everyone. And I think that it is absolutely fantastic that you are going to be an ambassador in West Virginia. And I think that's going to be a great thing. So I'm very, very excited for you. I'm excited for West Virginia. I'm excited for NASCA. And because I really feel what we've heard tonight is you really do embody the hope, and how we can rise, you know, through our experiences of being adults survivors of child abuse, and live a very fulfilled, hopeful life. So I'm going to allow Carol, Bill, John, to come on, give you a couple words to thank you and send you off. I'm going to let you then give us a few words at the end, Jessica, and I'm going to end the show. So, Bill, did you have a few words that you wanted to leave with Jessica?
Who's it for me?
Oh, John. Let's start with John. That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Whoever. Yeah. Well, listen, I tell you what, this has been such a good night for me to come on late like this. I feel so much better now than I did even, you know, 30 minutes ago because of the vibes I'm feeling off of this. So I think that's what, you know, Penelope's saying there is that, you know, I think all of us need this at certain times, you know. But I do want to just throw one little quick thing at y'all that I can relate so much with the foster system going on because after my abuse, okay, my mom actually took in foster kids, okay, and which was ironic, you know, and now I see why. Because even being the older of all the foster kids that came in at the time, I suddenly became this guardian, you know. Some were young girls around my own sister's age, which is only a year and a half, 2 years younger than me. You know, and they had little brothers that kept them together, you know. So, you know, I know what it's like to go through, you know, that kind of situation. And I've seen it, you know, since I was a small boy. And I have to commend you for where you are today on that alone, because there is so much involved with that, especially, you know, with the abuse. In almost every household, when it comes to that statistic, there's only a few good people out in the world, you know. And unfortunately, you know, that's what we have to change, you know, as far as I want to say, as far as that goes. But Jessica, keep it up, girl. Like, you know, family, I always tell somebody in family, we love you, and keep it up, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
I love that, John. Thank you. Well, Jessica,
well,
I want to give.
Go to Bill. Go to Bill.
Bill.
I want to encourage both John and Jessica, frankly, who are here tonight, to not hide the obvious brightness that you can carry. Ever. I mean, you just need to let it shine, and you know, and you can just trust that you're going to be okay. We have many things that people can do at NASCA, and we don't mind if you take another job or whatever, another responsibility too. But either of you that wants to, or both of you, feel free to call us, call me anytime for any reason, and we can get some direction or whatever, or ask some questions about NASCA or your own recovery. And I'd be happy to help in any way I can. So thank you very much, both of you, Carol and Penelope, too. And I will see you guys tomorrow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a very good show. And, again, I'm delighted with her. And I think she's going to do a lot more in her life because she has the passion, okay? We talk about the passion. And so thank you so much for coming on. It was a crazy night in the beginning because we didn't know who was going to be here or whatever. Weird. But it turned out very, very well. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Okay?
I really appreciate it.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Okay, good.
Thank you. That's
we'll see a lot more of you. Yeah.
Definitely.
I will be a stranger.
You won't be. I know you won't be. And I want to actually, I'm on your Facebook page, and I'm going to actually speak for you because you have this post on your Facebook page, and I just love this, so I'm going to read it. One of the biggest lies ever told is blood makes you family. No, blood makes you related. Loyalty, love, and trust makes you family. And
I
want to welcome you to the NASCA family. And it's our privilege to have you and to call you our sister.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And I'm going to give you 30 seconds, Jessica, if you want to leave us with another couple words before I close out the show.
Okay. Well, one thing I'd like to say is foster children are not bad children. Not all of us are fortunate enough to be born into families that appreciate and care for us as they should. I think too many children fall victim to the cracks in the system alone, of which there are many. But I believe there's always room for hope, and it's always better to rise together than alone. And one thing I want to say, you are definitely not alone. There are many of us.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true.
That's true.
That is absolutely so true.
Never give up. Never give up hope.
No, and at NASCA, you're never alone. You're never alone. It's been a privilege. It's been a privilege to be a member of the host team tonight, along with Carolyn Bell and John Anderson. Jessica Brown, our special guest tonight, Jessica from West Virginia. I just wish to thank you. And on behalf of NASCA, I want to thank our listening audience and leave you with our children's faith is all of our responsibility. If you see some, say something. Thank you and good night.
It is everybody's business.
Good night, everybody.
That's right. Good night. Good night. Good night.
'Cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.